Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we've been talking about what happens when we die.
Yeah, fun topic, isn't
it? Fun topic.
Yeah, everyone loves to talk about this.
But we always, I think, associate wills and trusts with that exact subject. How to handle the estate once you've left this world. And you've left the family behind, though, and now people are giving you a call and say, what do I do now? And you kind of want to talk about that this week.
Yeah, this is really one of the big questions of what can I expect if someone passes away? What do I need to know? What do I need to be prepared with as we come into the office, as we start this journey? And this is a ongoing series. So in the previous series, we've talked about what happens when you utilize a will, when you utilize a trust, what happens with your assets if they are a part of the plan or if they're not. So that means, do you have proper beneficiary designations and are they the same designations as what your will or trust are talking about? What happens if you own something jointly? What happens if you've brought your kids onto the bank account? Or even worse, what happens if you bring your kids onto the house, thinking that that's a good idea? So all of these things were talked about in previous shows, but now we're going to kind of turn the corner and say, okay, all of those things of what happens and try to get you prepared. Here we are now. You pick up the phone. You call the law office. You need some help. So whether you're a client, whether you are someone who listens to the show and you go, okay, we need help. So how can Paul help us? That's where we're at right now. So you pick up the phone, give us a call. And what happens now? So, well, there's going to be a couple things that we're going to be asking you about when you call us. So first of all, we always need to know what your relationship to the decedent is. And do you know if there is a will or if there is a trust in the background? Sometimes people know, well, I think mom and dad did a will like 100 gazillion years ago, but nobody knows where it's at. Okay, well, that's going to be an important factor. And who is named in that document as the legal representative for the estate? I need to talk to that person. So many times there is someone who is named as the personal representative. That's the term that Washington law uses. It's also known as an executor. If you use a trust, then it's called a successor trustee. So the executor, personal representative, that's what we name somebody in a will plan. The successor trustee is someone, that's the term of art in a trust environment, the revocable living trust. So I need to talk, or we need to talk, to the individual who is legally empowered. And if you have no plan at all, then we get to do some arm wrestling of who's going to be involved.
Yeah, it sounds like you're setting up a scenario where someone calls you who hasn't been a client.
Because
you would know all these things of someone who had been a client up to this point.
That's true.
Because, but you do deal with a lot of people who have never used your services. Now they have a death in the family.
That's right.
Now they're starting from scratch.
Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah. And unfortunately, more than 50% of people don't have a plan. So I got to address this issue. And the other 50 are not yet clients of mine. So we got to correct that. But so what would it look like is I need to talk to the right person because – that's the person with the legal authority. So if we have a will and a well-meaning child is calling to get information because you listen to the show, but your sibling who actually is empowered doesn't, I need that other sibling on the phone because if they're named in the document, then that's who we have to talk to. It is not good enough to be a beneficiary. It's not good enough to be a child. And then also, are they married? Do I have capacity with the surviving spouse? Are they able to get on the phone? Because are they named in the document as the personal representative? So many moving parts, and you can kind of hear what I need as an attorney. I need to talk to the person with authority. I need to talk to the person who's named in the document. And we've had multiple times when we're gathering some information, we'll do some immediate information gathering, and such as, well, do you know if they have assets? Do you know where some of the assets are? Do we have a will? Do we have a trust? So do we have legal documents to support everything? Are they married? Is the surviving spouse, if they're not the one who's calling, are they able to be a part of the conversation? So all these different information gathering tools. First is what you can expect when you first call. Now, what we're hoping to do is to set up an appointment in the next week or two. But there is something that will govern whether or not we can set that appointment up. And that is, when did the individual die? So even with clients who we have the information on, that we've been in relationship with, we know who the rightful person to talk to is, we still need to wait for a death certificate. So everything when someone passes away hinges upon getting a death certificate. Without the death certificate, I can't get to probate if you use a will or if you have no plan. I can't even empower you as a successor trustee without the death certificate. And it's, I could empower you, but then it's going to take the death certificate to be connected with that empowerment for financial institutions. So we need a death certificate. That usually takes anywhere from 7 to 14 days, depending on the county, and just depending on how the moon, stars, sun, and the tides were acting, and why people die in groves at certain times and don't die at other times. I have no understanding. But it seems to be that way. It seems to be that something happens and people die, and then there's no deaths for a while. So I don't get that part. But so it depends on how busy the coroner is to make and sign off on the death certificate. Here's a fun one. If a mistake was done in giving the information, or if you use poor penmanship, and they
poor penmanship.
Yep, and you can't, and the coroner can't read the information that you gave them. Then
how often does that happen?
Oh, it happens. Just recently it happened. And they make a mistake on the death certificate. It goes back to the person who filled out the form, which is not the firm. And then it has to be corrected. So you see the mistake. Oh, that's not the maiden name of our mom. Or, oh, that's not the actual date of death. Oh, that's not where he or she died. Oh, that's not whatever the case is. Now, for some reason, making a correction on a death certificate seems to take much, much longer than just producing the first one. I don't get it. I don't know why.
Interesting.
So it'll take another 2 to 4 weeks just to get a correction made out. So now all of a sudden, if there was a mistake, we're minimally a month out from when a person passed away. And people are getting anxious. How do we pay for funerals? How do we pay the bills? How do we keep the lights on? We're getting notices of that they're going to disconnect electricity or water or whatever else is going on with the house. And now there is an abundance of insecurity that is going through everything, and that's bummer. So it's already a difficult time. Now we're behind the eight ball because of just time. So let's talk about time. How long will it take to close an estate? You're going to love this answer. I don't know. I can tell you some of the minimums. It minimally will take 4 to 5 months to close a trust. And that's because there is a specific thing that we need to do to notify creditors. We need to do that in a probated estate or in as well. So there is just a time that has to take place so that we can eliminate creditors. We don't do it 100% of the time, but I would say a high majority of the time, we need to send out a thing called a notice to creditors. So that makes sure that creditors are given an opportunity to come to the estate. And what it does is it limits their time to 4 months when it's properly done to put forward a claim and say, the person owed me money. Now, if we have a bill, they're a known creditor. So therefore, we have to deal with them. But this is to unknown creditors. Wouldn't it be lovely that if we went through the whole process of cleaning up an estate, getting things dispersed, and 18 months later, after somebody passed away, after everything is closed, an unknown creditor came out of the woodwork, said, oh, by the way, I have this private contract with somebody. Who's going to pay me? Well, that would be a bummer. Mm. So if we don't do the notice to creditors, someone could have up to 2 years to do that. But if we do the notice to creditors, they have 4 months. So what we're trying to do is limit the estate's liability to people that we don't know about. Again, if we have a bill, we got something in the mail, we've got credit cards, we've got ambulance bills, yeah, but we've got medical bills, those are known creditors.
Yeah, if you don't know about that creditor, then how would they get the notice that they've got 4 months to...
Oh, because the notice of creditors. So we have to publish it in a local newspaper for 3 consecutive weeks.
Okay.
And the legal system...
And that you're
system,
out.
If that you're out.
So if somebody gets to you 6 months later, you say, sorry.
Yep.
You can do that.
You are legally... forbidden is the only word that I can think of, but that's not the right word that I really want. But your time to put forward a claim has now lapsed.
Okay.
And so therefore, we've protected the estate. So I like that for estates.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple of exceptions. Number one, if you are married and you are participating in the finances and you can tell us exactly what's going on, well, that's an exception.
Yeah.
If you've been taking care of the parent or the deceased person for a period of time and you're the one who's been paying the bills for the past year, you're probably really intimate with everything that's going on financially. So we can have the discussion. Is it still wise to do? I think so. Is it mandatory? Nope, we can wait 2 years. So there's some wiggle room in why would we do that? It's to make sure that we have that clock come to an end and we don't have to be looking over our shoulders. So I almost always suggest that we do it. Some people don't elect. I'm not the one who makes the decision. I only make recommendations.
But so, what's interesting is you say in a well-designed trust, not a will, but more of a trust, you can really have things wrapped up in 4 to 5 months?
Yeah.
That's amazing to
yeah.
me because everything I've been involved with it has been always been like at least a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, or two.
Yes. Now, there's things that I cannot control. So let's talk about that. Timing. We're talking about timing. So at about the 4 or 5 month mark in a recent estate that was a client, we had some unique assets. We had assets that were some privately held company stock. Okay, well, the privately held company, they're trying to make a company go. So getting the value of that is more difficult and it's going to take longer. We sent out notices to beneficiaries. Hey, it's time to make some elections that we have to. Well, in one of the estates I did, I sent out a notification in March. They literally just got to us. So that's a 6-month delay, not on my part, but on the beneficiary's part. It shouldn't delay the other beneficiaries, but it delayed the full closing. So there's things I can't control.
Right.
There's things that I can't, even with a well-designed plan, even with all assets integrated, I don't know if the person you've named as your successor trustee or your personal representative is going to be the type of personality that is very administrative and let's get this done, tell me what I need to do, or if they're going to be the one who needs some space and some time to grieve, because we forget people are grieving. And the individual that you may say, this is my trusted individual, may need some space to work some things out. So I can't control these things. All I can tell you is, could I, with a well-designed estate plan, specifically a revocable living trust, could I have that dealt with in 4 to 6 months? Absolutely. If everything aligns, if we know where all the assets are, if the plan is well-designed, and I have a successor trustee that is highly engaged, then I can do it. But
that's the active word.
Yes.
Highly engaged.
Yeah, but these things I can't control. And so is that typical that I can close something in 4 to 6 months? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. 9 to 12 months. If I'm being completely honest, 9 to 12 months is probably what I see the most close in. That is even rather rapid, and it has nothing to do with the process or our ability to actually function. It's just outside forces that I can't control. Mm. So if you have 20 different accounts, is that going to be a clean, easy estate to close? Not in your life.
Right.
And not in your death either.
Okay.
Nope. So do your family a favor. Consolidate. Get a good plan. There is a greater opportunity to take the load off of their shoulders. Make the right election of who is going to close the estate, and things can be done more expediently. Not rushed, but expediently.
Okay, what happens when we die? Continuing this discussion with Paul Grant. You like the way he thinks about this subject and have him work on your estate plan. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, and there's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and more, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. We have an upcoming seminar, and it's going to be held at Anthony's Homeport in Kirkland. This is for well-qualified clients, and if you have an estate that is worth $3 million or more, then we would love for you to come and personally enjoy the evening and the information. We're going to be discussing wills, trusts, what does it mean to have a good estate plan, and what you need in it. So come and join me at Anthony's Homeport in Kirkland. It is going to be on Tuesday, October 28th, starting at 6 p.m. Come join me for a live workshop at Anthony's Homeport. You can register for this event at legacyandfaith.com or by calling our law firm at 425-939-9948. Again, we would love to see you for this live event on Tuesday, October 28th. Go to legacyandfaith.com to register.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, what happens when we die? How does the estate proceed with good planning? Planning with Purpose, that's the name of his firm. And Paul, so people have made the initial call. Now they want to come in for an initial meeting, the family does. For what's next? How's that look like?
Yeah, so after the first phone call, and we were talking before break, some of the timing issues, and could we do a quick job? Well, it depends on whether everything's aligned, but we got to have the first meeting. So when someone comes into the office and we have the death certificate, what we're asking for is bring in as much as you already have available. So have you started to receive bills? Do you have copies of recent statements, whether it's bills or assets? What do you know about the bank account? Whatever paperwork you have, gather it all up, bring it on in. And so there's a business side to all this, unfortunately. And I know people understand that a law firm, whether it's mine or anyone else's, they have to run a business. So there's some contracts to look over. We have to be hired in order to take the next step. So unfortunately, we have to do some of the administrative work out of the gate. And that's a bummer. I don't like doing that. I'd rather sit around, give somebody a hug, talk about the individual. Specifically, if it's been a client of mine, I know this person and they've passed away. So that's a bummer for me too. I don't like it when people I know and are connected with, many of my clients, I genuinely have a good relationship with and love them. So there's a loss that I personally feel when clients pass away. And so the first thing I hope that you'll find is that we have moments of just compassion, of connecting with the individuals that are in our office, and we're not moving overly quickly into the business realm. Yeah, we got to get there. But I hope what you will really find is a moment of compassion. The word says to mourn with those who mourn, and rejoice with those who rejoice. So I need to take a moment and mourn with people that are mourning. It is our biblical mandate. It is the humanity that allows us to connect. So I'm hoping that you will find that with every person in my firm, that we will have times of compassion and mourning and take our cues from you of how things proceed. We got to get to the legal technical stuff, yes, but hopefully we have a moment where we can connect and just be people together in the moment of a loss and hurt and pain. Now, with that said, what are some of the things that we have to do? We have a contract that we have to sign in, depending on whether that individual had a will or if they had no planning. Those two would head us towards the thought process that we're going to have to open up a probate. And in the background, what we've already done, typically we're going to have a meeting within a week to 2 weeks after we receive a phone call that someone passed away. And we've already begun some of the probate paperwork, some of the necessity documents, so that when someone is before us and they're the ones who are going to be legally empowered to represent the estate, that we can actually get their signature and make this process as smooth as possible. Now, if it's a revocable living trust, it's a client of mine, or even if it's a revocable living trust and it wasn't a client of mine, that's called a successor trustee. Those are different documents. With my clients, I know that that we're probably going to be avoiding the probate process because we've been in a relationship. Hopefully, we've done a perfect job in designing things. We have gotten the assets aligned with the plan itself, and we already know what the road is going to look like because we've done this before. If it's an outside trust, now we have to make a probate determination. Typically in my firm, what we're going to do is we're going to have probate papers ready. And if we don't need them, we'll just put them aside. But I would rather be prepared than unprepared. I'd rather be prepared with more documents that are then unnecessary than not have documents that are necessary and drag somebody back to the office again because we didn't have everything aligned. So, and I think most law firms are going to be very aware and very cognizant of trying to do as much of the work that they feel comfortable in doing before the family has ever stepped into the room. That's my experience in discussing this process with other attorneys. So, it doesn't help the firm either, just on a business model. So if I back out of the compassionate part and looked at the business model, you know, it doesn't do me any good to have multiple meetings if it's unnecessary. So we're going to try to do as much work up front, make this as smooth as possible, make any corrections that we need to, get that reprinted out, signed, so that we have as much as we can at that moment. Now, if we're going to go through a probate process, now we have to get to the court. We have to send things into the court. We have to have original death certificates. They have to verify that indeed someone has passed away. If we have the original will, it doesn't matter if it's a probate and it doesn't matter if it's a revocable living trust. If someone has an original will, Washington requires that we turn it into the court. Even if we're not going to open up a probate, it has to be registered with the court. So therefore, we have to deal with the will out of the gate. And so there's always some communication with the court to make sure that we're keeping the individual that we now represent, which is the personal representative, also known as an executor, or a successor trustee. That is the person we represent. So my concern and my attention has turned towards that individual. That's my new client. So now my job is to protect them. If there are other beneficiaries, I have to run everything through the person I represent. I can't give beneficiaries legal advice. I can't give beneficiaries things that my client says don't give them. I have to represent the person. So if you have a difficult family situation, my job is to protect my client, not the whole family. And there's just no way around it. So That first meeting is understanding who are the parties, who is going to benefit, who do we have that may be difficult in the relationship, who's out of state, who has technology capacity and ability. So can we do things through electronic means, or do we have to do everything through paper? These are the things we're trying to figure out to make as smooth of a transition as possible in a very, very difficult time. Mm. So that first meeting is really important. That first meeting sets the tone of the relationship, and we're trying to do as much work as possible. But there's things that intervene. We want to move things along the journey as quick as possible. We can't control it. I can't control financial institutions. I can't control whether banks take things that they're supposed to or not supposed to. I can't control whether accounts get locked down. That's not my decision. There's so many intervening factors on what happens. And if you have a really good estate plan, there is a greater opportunity that this point and this time it is going to be smoother instead of a more bumpy road.
What happens when we die? You need a good plan, and Paul would like to supply that for you and your family. People like your discussion of this subject, and they want help. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us. It's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.